When Sunchaser awoke from his contemplation, darkness had swallowed the day, and only a faint gray haze limned the western horizon. He looked at his cup. His clams had gone stone cold. Kestrel was quietly applying the chickweed poultice to Helper's mangy spots when she noticed Sunchaser's gaze.
Are you back?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Do you often drift off that way?
Kestrel finished coating Helper's mangy spots and rubbed her hands in the sand to clean them.
To tell you the truth, I don't know. I may, but I rarely have anybody around to tell me about it.
Isn't it hard, being alone all the time? I die from loneliness.
No, I'm far more lonely when I'm with people than when I'm by myself.
I don't understand.
Loneliness, at least for me, happens only when I don't like myself very much. I generally like myself when I'm alone. It's only when I'm with others that I don't.
Why don't you like yourself when you're with people?
Oh, I suppose it's because the reflection of myself that I see in their eyes terrifies me. I see myself as they see me, and I know I can never live up to their expectations. I know I can never be the man they think I am.
And so you're lonely then?
Yes. Lonely for the me that I like. I haven't seen that man much in the past cycle.
Then being with others hurts you.
Nearly every conversation, every moment I spend with someone else is like a collision. I feel injured when I walk away.
I never thought of loneliness that way. I'm happier when I can hear someone talking or moving about close by.
Dreamers are more fragile than normal people, easily bruised.
You? Easily bruised? The great Sun Chaser?
Too easily, I'm afraid.
Kestrel lightly rubbed her chin across the fine hide that covered her knees. She affected him oddly. Despite what he'd just said, the past 5 days had not been a collision. They'd been filled with easy talk and laughter.
But I didn't mean that being near you makes me lonely, Kestrel. I've enjoyed the time we've spent together.
So have I, Sunchaser.
Her eyes held him riveted. Suddenly, he felt as though he stood on a high ridge in the middle of a lightning storm. His whole body prickled. When he began to feel it in all the wrong places, he hastily dropped his gaze and grimaced at the fire.
Do you want to sleep, Kestrel?
He started to rise, but she reached out and put a hand on his arm.
No, I was wishing that we might talk more, if that's all right.
He sank back to the ground.
What about?
Oh, I don't know.
Not more about dreamers, I hope. I think I've bared my soul enough for one night.
No, let's... I was hoping you would tell me something about the Otter Clan.
Oh, Kestrel, forgive me. It should have occurred to me long before now that you'd be wondering about them. I think you will like them very much, and I know they'll like you.
It doesn't matter about me. I just... They must like Cloud Girl. If anything happens to me, I want to know that there's someone among them who will take care of her and love her.
There will be. And as for anything happening to you...
Let's not. I don't want to talk about my husband. Please, tell me more about the Otter Clan. How big is their village?
About 30 people, maybe a few more. I'm not certain of how many children have been born this past winter. Their leader's name is Oxbaum. He's a dignified, feisty man of 53 summers. A good leader. He...
And the village sits in a fir forest, doesn't it? At the very edge of the sea?
It does, yes.
And they make their houses by setting up whale or mammoth bones and covering the bones with hides. Isn't that right?
Ice Plant must have told you those things.
Yes. Sunchaser, have you ever heard of a woman named Wind Shadow?
No. Why?
She was Ice Plant's mother. I remembered her name last night. I just thought maybe.
No. Sorry. I haven't heard of her. Was she born here on the coast?
I can't say for certain. Ice Plant told me that she was from the Otter Clan, that they were her people. I know she told him many stories about the village and the sea. I've always assumed that she was born here, but I'm not sure.
Stars had begun to pop out across the indigo slate of night. Against that background, her flame-dyed face seemed unearthly, almost too beautiful to be real. Sunchaser couldn't take his eyes from her.
So Ice Plant wasn't born here?
No, he was born among my people in the marsh country. His mother married my uncle. She died when Ice Plant was very young.
And you don't know the names of any of Windshadow's family?
No.
Wind Shadow never spoke to him about them? Or if she did, Iceplant never told you?
He never told me.
Tell me about Iceplant. What did he look like? Maybe I can...
He was tall. Almost as tall as you are. And he had a very round face. With a straight nose and a pointed chin.
I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm sorry. I should have known it wouldn't help much. Nearly everyone in the Otter Clan fits that description.
I want you to ask me questions. To ask anything that might help. I've been having nightmares that I'll finally get to Otter Clan Village, and there will be no one there who's ever heard of Iceplant. And then...
Sunchaser could fill in the rest for himself. And then she would be truly alone and without hope. He'd been worrying about the same thing. For 10 cycles he'd been visiting the Otter Clan, and he had never heard of anyone there marrying into the Bear Looks Back Clan. The whys and why nots had begun to weigh on him. But it was such a large clan, with people spread out all over, including some who lived in his own home village of Brushnut. In the cycles since Wind Shadow left, her relatives could have moved 12 times.
I've been trying to prepare myself, but it's very hard to do.
Kestrel, please, don't take this the wrong way, but is it possible that Iceplant was wrong about being related to the Otter Clan? That he...
No. I know what you're thinking. He wouldn't have lied to me, not ever. He asked me to marry him and come with him to the sea. We tried to escape, to do it. But Lambkill captured Iceplant and forced him to reveal which trail I'd taken, and...
Iceplant told Lambkill which trail you'd taken?
Yes. Iceplant... He thought it was a way for us to be together. Lambkill had promised that if Iceplant admitted to being my lover and told him which trail I'd taken, he wouldn't kill us. Lambkill promised to banish us both.
And Iceplant believed him?
Yes.
Sunchaser shook his head. Strange the way the human soul worked at desperate moments, making up reasons to justify things the person would never ordinarily say or do.
What are you thinking?
Oh, nothing really. We humans think we're so clever and strong, but when we are asked for real loyalty or sacrifice, most of us fail.
You mean Iceplant?
Not just Iceplant. Everyone. I think we're all selfish at heart, though there are glorious moments when people rise above their inborn preoccupation with themselves. But not often.
He didn't betray me, Sunchaser. He tried to save me. That's how I escaped. At the very end, Iceplant wrestled Lambkill to the ground and told me to run. And I did. It was right after that that Lambkill murdered. He loved me. He did, Sunchaser.
Of course he did. I never doubted that, Kestrel.
She struggled to stand. He rose and offered her a hand. She took it, and he helped her to her feet. He could see Kestrel's legs shaking beneath her dress. Powerful emotions flitted across her face. Anguish, sick confusion, emptiness. So much emptiness. Sunchaser tightened his grip on her hand, and they stood for a long while just staring at each other.
Oh, Kestrel, don't cry.
He released her hand and wrapped his arms around her shoulders, pulling her close. The top of her head barely reached the middle of his chest. He patted her back gently.
It's all right. It's over. You're going to be fine. You're safe now.
I can't let myself believe that. Even though I feel safe with you.
She slipped her arms around his waist and nuzzled her cheek against his shirt.
Thank you for helping me. My husband will probably kill you for it.
I'll do my best to jump sideways when he aims.
Don't joke.
Kestrel lifted her chin to look at him severely.
Really, Sunchaser? Lambkill will never stop hunting for me. You've placed yourself in grave danger.
He stared down into her eyes, and blood started to pulse deafeningly in his ears. The feel of her body pressed so warmly against him stirred terrifying sensations.
Yes, I can see that I have.
It took a deliberate act of will to pull away from her. Kestrel's extended arms hovered uncertainly for a moment while she frantically searched his face.
Oh, I didn't mean...
I know you didn't. My fault.
Are you all right? I know about dreamers and women. I haven't hurt your ability to dream, have I? I would never...
No, you're not responsible for that. Any problems I'm having are strictly my own fault.
For a time, she didn't move.
I think I'll sleep now.
Sleep well.
She turned away toward her robes.
Good night, Sunchaser.
He watched her crawl in beside Cloud Girl. She curled herself around her baby and pulled the hides up to her chin. But her eyes remained open, peering out into the darkness. Sunchaser shoved his hands into his coat pockets. Before he realized it, they'd clenched into fists. He felt foolish and vulnerable standing there, but he couldn't convince himself to sleep. He knew he would just lie there and stare blindly at the stars.
I think I'll gather some more wood.
Kestrel tugged her hide higher, covering half of her face.
Thank you.
The wind cooled Sunchaser's hot face, calming him enough that his shoulder muscles finally relaxed. His gaze brushed the sable belly of Brother Sky. The star people glittered like a million snowflakes frozen midway in their fall to Earth. Charcoal plumes of cloud drifted above the western horizon.
It's all right. Tomorrow I'll deliver Kestrel and Cloud Girl safely to Utter Clan Village. Then I'll return to the rock shelter and start dreaming seriously.
The spring leaves of the oaks trembled in the cool breeze that swirled through the forest. Wildflowers covered the open spaces, painting the slopes with blazes of red, blue, and white. Oxbaum dragged a cut pine sapling along the game trail toward the new village site. Though he had trimmed the branches, the sapling stretched 30 hands long and kept catching on the bushes and rocks that lined the trail. The effort of constantly tugging it loose had tired him and slowed his pace to a snail's crawl. What could people expect? At his age, he was lucky just to be able to tug on a log, let alone move it. He minded only that his dallying would be holding up the lodge construction. The day had begun warm and sunny, but now towering gray thunderheads pushed across Brother Sky's belly, and Oxbaum could smell rain on the wind. He forced his miserable legs to go faster. The last thing he wanted was to sleep out in the open during a downpour. He feared that his bad knees would freeze up and never unthaw again. On the hilltop, people were building new lodges while they roasted haunches of venison over open fires. Excitement pervaded the air. Oxbaum began climbing up the slope. It was at times like this that he missed Little Mountain Lake the most. Had she been alive, she would have been jumping around him, laughing, asking him 1,000 questions, and he would have completely forgotten the pain in his old body. When he made it to the top of the hill, Horseweed and Balsam saw him coming and hurried to help him. A broad grin split Balsam's young face, but Horseweed had a serious expression. Had it been only a moon ago that they had seemed the same age?
Here, Grandfather.
Horseweed took the sapling from Oxbaum's hands.
Why do you do this? Balsam and I can carry the poles. Let us know the next time you're going out into the forest. Why don't you go sit down by the fire? Grandmother made a delicious soup that's hanging in the bag on the tripod.
Balsam walked around to pick up the other end of the sapling, and Oxbaum smiled and put a hand on Horseweed's shoulder.
I do it because I still can, grandson. But food sounds good. Have you eaten yet?
Yeah, we ate as soon as Grandmother would let us.
I'll bet you did. Well, I hope there's enough left for me.
Well, there is. When the soup bag started getting close to the bottom, Grandmother beat us away with an oak branch.
How are the lodges coming along?
Well, the frames are almost done.
Oxbaum hung on to Horseweed's arm as they plodded through the camp. The people had decided to make two big lodges rather than several small ones, because they had brought only a few hides with them, and because it would be far colder here in the foothills than down closer to the sea. Four families would be assigned to each house, so they could share one another's warmth. People crowded around the lodge sites, babbling back and forth as they inspected the pest holes dug into the rocky soil. Oxbaum glanced upward. The clouds had melted together to form a bluish-gray blanket that blotted out Brother Sky. He prayed they would finish their lodges before the brunt of the storm struck. Then they would see whose shortcuts had been critical. Lodges never fell down in nice weather, only when the wind was howling like a wounded saber-toothed cat, and the rain was blasting the earth like above old man's very wrath. Horseweed and Balsam left him, hauling the sapling to the second lodge site, right beside the first, and Oxbaum hobbled unsteadily over to the fire, where Sumac knelt, stirring the soup. Straggles of gray hair had come undone from her short braid and fell around her face in wisps. She pushed them back, revealing a streak of soot that slanted across her high forehead. When Oxbaum dropped down atop an old stump, every joint in his back and hips popped like green fur in a hot fire. Sumac had filled a wooden bowl. She handed it to him.
"You old lunatic. I thought maybe you'd fallen down dead out there. I was getting worried."
"If I'd been dead, you wouldn't have had anything to worry about."
"Oh, I would have worried anyway. It's become a bad habit."
Oxbaum patted her cheek gently, then lifted the bowl and sipped the soup. The delicate flavor of venison fawn mixed with phlox blossoms and onion coated his tongue.
"This is delicious. Where did you get the onions?"
"Down in that wet meadow at the foot of the hill. They're growing everywhere, along with spring beauty, beaver tail grass, and some cow parsnip."
Oxbaum finished drinking his soup and raked out the last bits of meat and vegetable, discarding a spall from one of the cooking stones. Grit always collected in the bottom of the cooking sack. Finished, he set his bowl down and extended knobby brown hands to the fire.
"Oh, it looks like you have company coming, my husband."
"Hmm? Who?"
Sumac tipped her withered chin toward the second lodge site. Harrier had laid down the stone axe and hammerstone he'd been using to thin the bases of the saplings and was walking across the camp toward Oxbaum. Such a tall young man, almost Sunchaser's height. He left his black hair loose and it swayed with his gait, partly obscuring his massive brow. Oxbaum lifted a hand in greeting.
"Good day, Harrier."
"Good day, Oxbaum."
Harrier settled himself cross-legged before the fire.
"I hope you don't mind, Oxbaum. Last night you were so tired that I didn't want to burden you any longer, but I would appreciate it if you would speak with me some more."
"Of course. What else do you need to know?"
"My brothers and I talked last night. We would like your permission to stay here for another half moon."
"To wait for this Kestrel?"
"Yes. She may not have arrived yet, but we are certain she will. A group of hunters from Whalebeard Village came by while you were cutting saplings. They said they hadn't seen her, nor did they know of anyone who had. That narrows the number of villages we have to search."
"Why are you so sure she'll come here? She could have headed for the high mountains. There are many more villages up there than down on the coast. And maybe she got eaten by a saber-toothed cat. Who knows?"
"It's possible. But if she's alive, she may well end up here searching for her family. Her husband, the traitor Lambkill."
"The crazy one?"
"Yes. He's as bad as a rabid skunk, but I'm sure he told the truth when he said that his wife's dead lover had relatives on the coast. Lambkill believed that Kestrel would seek refuge with those people, the Otter Clan."
"She may find Otter Clan members long before she reaches this village."
"Maybe."
"These Whalebeard Village hunters, were they just passing by on the way to their hunting ground? Or did they come here for a reason?"
"They came looking for Sunchaser. They said that illness had struck their village and they needed a healer. Catstraw told them that no one here had seen Sunchaser in a long time. The Whalebeard hunters spent another hand of time talking, then they left."
"I see."
Sumac knelt beside Oxbaum and studied Harrier through brooding eyes.
"And what will you do, Harrier, if we decide to grant this Kestrel refuge? She is traveling with a newborn baby. We will listen to her side of the story before we decide. And if she has good reason for running away from her husband and for murdering your brother..."
"Good reason?"
Harrier lurched to his feet.
"Buffalo Bird would have done nothing to deserve such a death.
You are his brother. Of course you would think that. But a desperate woman with a little baby might see danger where you would not. Maybe she thought she was protecting her child.
Oxbalm put his arm around Sumac's bony old shoulders, lending her his support. Though he wondered what he would do when faced with Kestrel stories. Could he offer her shelter, ever? Even if she were innocent of all the charges against her, so many rumors had run the trails that half of the neighboring villages would care nothing about her side of the story. They would simply want her dead. Sheltering her would be very risky.
It will be all right, though, don't you think, my wife, if Harrier and his brothers stay with us for half a moon?
Yes, if you think it best.
Thank you. We are grateful.
Sumac rose and went to help the circle of women who had begun sewing the hides together with which to cover the completed lodge frames. In the distance, a transparent gray veil wavered over the hills, moving toward them quickly. The women were obviously rushing to get the lodges finished.
Mutt Harrier, if Kestrel has not shown up here in that amount of time, we will ask you to leave. You understand? We want no more trouble over this matter.
I understand. We will leave with no complaints. Your wife, she does not believe the stories about Kestrel?
She may believe them, but for her, that's not the point. She's stubborn. Even if a man were killed before her eyes, she would force me to give the murderer time to tell his side of the story. She's always been that way. I've never understood it, but I respect her for it. No one can say that justice is rendered hastily in this village.
Our clan will demand the chance to render justice, too.
Yes, I imagine so.
And if you find Kestrel innocent, you will hand her over to us so that we may take her home to face our people?
No, I didn't say that. I don't know what we would do in that case. We would have to consider.
If you denied us the right to judge the murderer of a member of our clan, you could start a war. Do you realize that, Oxbalm?
It is a risk I am willing to take.
Then it would be better for all of us if I try to catch this Kestrel before she makes it to your village. That will save you from having to make such a decision. Let it be known that my brothers and I will be establishing two lodges of our own, one on each of the trails leading here.
If that is what you wish to do, do it. But you should know that if the relatives of this woman's lover discover that you have murdered her without just cause, and they come to me demanding retaliation, I will be forced to send out my warriors to hunt you down and bring you back here. Do we understand each other?
It seems that this strange woman from the marsh country may cause a war no matter how hard we all try to avoid it. But I understand you, Oxbalm.
Good.
I was talking to your dreamer, Catchstraw. He has great power. So much so that he scared me. He told me that he's been having dreams about terrible things happening to this village. I hope this war is not what he meant.
So do I. What else did Catchstraw tell you?
Very little. After hearing our stories about Lambkill's wife, he said he would see that she was punished for her crimes. He said that most of the village elders will support whatever punishment he thinks is appropriate. Is that true? Does Catchstraw have that sort of influence?
He has followers, yes.
Thank you for agreeing to let us stay for half a moon.
Don't make me regret it.
Harrier inclined his head and went to call his brothers together. After a few minutes of hushed conversation, the brothers dropped their tools, and the four of them trotted down the trail to begin cutting trees for their own lodges.
I hate bickering with other clans.
When the Star People sailed to midway in their evening journey, Lambkill rose silently from his robes, picked up his pack, and walked out along an earthen path that led through the marshes. The path slithered in serpentine patterns, winding around one shallow pond of water and between two others. Lambkill knelt on a moss-covered slab of granite, facing east toward the land of Dawnchild, the Lifegiver. The seven old women had just risen. Their faces glittered in the moonless darkness, watching him with interest. Lambkill smiled, gaps dark among his broken teeth.
Yes. You watch, old women. Tonight you will see a sight that will strike fear into even your cold white hearts.
Reverently, he unlaced his pack and drew out his son. He carefully unwrapped little Coyote's otterskin sheath and turned him over on his back. Starlight gilded the boy's face, which had darkened and shriveled like an old dwarf's. Dwarfs had great power. Above Old Man had given them a special ability to speak with him. Everywhere in all of the clans across the country where Lambkill traded, dwarfs held seats of honor, and nowhere more so than in the lands of the People of the Masks.
You're even more beautiful than I'd imagined, my son. I feel your soul tugging at mine. I've heard you whispering to me in my head for over a moon. Now I must give you the ability to speak aloud.
He gently placed his son on the dew-soaked moss. He could have used help with this ceremony, but not from his traitorous brother. Tannin had become the enemy, though Lambkill couldn't let his brother know that. He needed Tannin too much right now. That was why Lambkill waited until late each night and left their camp to talk to his son alone. What Tannin didn't witness, he couldn't object to.
If I were in the far north, my son, I'd have a dozen men helping me. They understand your power. But here, you frighten people. Especially my weak-spirited brother. He wouldn't understand this. So we must be very careful. When you can speak loud enough for Tannin to hear, we won't have to sneak around like this.
Lambkill bent over and placed his mouth against his son's shrunken lips. He breathed life into that tiny, dead baby, as a man would craft a finely made dark point. Little Coyote tasted like dust and smoke. For five hands of time, Lambkill breathed, until Dawn Child's pale blue glow swelled over the eastern hills. The Star People retreated in reverence. Lambkill blinked. His son's shadow was running lightly across the calm surface of the eastern pond, as though a figment spawned by the darkness. The dancing gleam of Dawn Child clung like a glowing aura around Little Coyote's shadow. Elated, Lambkill braced himself, but he kept on breathing life into his son's dry, smoke-flavored mouth. Little Coyote's shadow stepped off of the water and came trotting down the path toward him, tiny and dark. So dark that his shadow blotted the reeds and the reflected gleam of the water. Blacker than black. The shadow crept inside Little Coyote's body.
Hello, Father. I am here. What do you want of me?
Lambkill fell back to the moss, his eyes wide. He braced a hand on the cool green carpet to steady himself. His son's face glowed as though from an inner fire. He stood Little Coyote up.
Oh, my son. My son, I finally gave you a body. I have been trying for cycles, you must believe me.
I waited a very long time for this dead body.
Yes, I know. It's the best I can do right now. I've tried for a long time to give you a living body. The women in my clan whispered that my wives couldn't give birth because I'd been cursed by the spirits. But I knew better. Why do you think I married a baby like your mother? She was fresh and unspoiled. I selected her the day she first entered the menstrual hut. Yes, I knew that someday my seed would take hold in that virgin ground.
What do you want of me?
Lambkill wet his lips and leaned forward, putting his face only a handbreadth from his son's. Those tiny green stones of eyes silvered, as though frozen beneath a crust of water.
The truth, my son, that's all. Your mother is out there running from me. Where is she? I must find her and make her pay for what she did to you, to us.
Little Coyote's mouth moved ever so slightly, like a trick of starlight.
There is a witch who knows. You must meet him. When you do, all of your questions will be answered, and she will be a breath from your hands.
Boy. Boy, can you hear me?
The man parted the darkness with his hands, and his gaze lanced through the layers of cloud and rain to the boy far below. Boy's soul glowed a rich blue that suffused his ugly dead body.
Boy, your fear is like an icicle piercing my heart. I can help you, if you will let me.
Did you not tell me, man, that I should learn to be like a dead child to all those who love me? That to die to one's friends is to cease to judge them in anything? I am now dead to you, man.
If you are truly dead to me, boy, then you should not fear talking with me. Perhaps you should consider why you fear me. Have you judged me, boy? Is that why you will not speak? Boy?
But where could they have gone?
I don't know.
Sunchaser wandered through the bleak remains of Otter Clan Village. Whalebone lodge frames littered the ground in haphazard disarray, some of them crushed to sparkling white splinters. Sunchaser knelt and picked up tools, fragments of clothing, a beautiful seashell hairpin. He touched each tenderly before putting it down again. His deep-set eyes had a haunted look.
Oxbalm must have known that the power here had vanished.
Vanished?
Yes, or been driven out, depending on the way you look at it.
Kestrel stared again at the dozens of ravaged mammoth skeletons that littered the beach. When they had come upon the first dead mammoth, Sunchaser had broken into a run, heading toward the abandoned village. Kestrel had passed by the skeletons in silence, but now they drew her full attention. She folded her arms and dug nervous fingers into her flesh. The scent of death pervaded everything like a foul wind.
You mean that the mammoths who attacked the village drove the power away?
Yes.
For what purpose?
They knew it would force the Otter Clan to leave.
Kestrel kept her face blank, trying not to alarm Sunchaser any more than he already was, but her knees had gone weak. The empty village lay in ghostly silence. Scaffold burials nestled in the limbs of the fir trees. Many of them stretched no more than 6 hands long. Little children, babies. Brightly painted hides covered the bodies, but here and there the wind had torn the hides away and revealed a tiny, bloating face. Flies swarmed in glittering clouds around the scaffolds.
Why would Mammoth Above have wanted to force the Otter Clan to leave this place?
Sunchaser stood.
To force the crossing upon me. Yes, good plume, now I see. What a fool I am. I expected a different kind of threat, one that winged over the ground of the human heart. So from here on out, I must learn to feel my way. But why now? Where is Monster Rock Eagle?
What does that mean?
Sunchaser shook his head lightly, and Kestrel knew that he wouldn't explain. Unable to bear it, she turned away and walked toward the shore. Cloud Girl twined a hand in Kestrel's hair. The baby had been quiet since they arrived, riding content in her rabbit fur sack and looking around. Kestrel reached over her shoulder to pat that tiny hand.
It's all right, baby. Everything's going to be all right. Your father's people can't be far.
For 10 moons, this place had been a sparkling apparition in her dreams. She wondered what Iceplant would say if he stood beside her now, witnessing the desolation. Would he rage at a bubbled man? Or would he just walk away quietly, as she was doing, eaten by a despair that sundered the soul? Kestrel heard the sound of Sunchaser's graceful steps as he came to her. A scarcely concealed fear strained his handsome face. He'd clenched his right hand into a fist.
I'm sorry, Kestrel.
It's not your fault.
Isn't it? Isn't it, Kestrel? I'm not nearly as certain as you are.
How could it be your fault?
Sunchaser glanced at Kestrel, and the misery in his face deepened.
I feel very lonely today, Kestrel.
Turning without another word, he trudged down the beach, the quiver slung over his left shoulder, swaying with his movements. Kestrel lagged behind, letting him be alone with himself. As the bright afternoon wore on, Catstraw trotted along the crest of the sea cliffs. The wind had turned warm, bringing him the scents of many animals, making his empty stomach growl ravenously. Gusts caressed his black fur like gentle human fingers. He wove in and around the cypress trees that crowded the cliffs, marveling at their gnarled branches and twisted shapes. Father Sun's rays coated the evergreen needles like pale yellow honey. The first spring butterflies had appeared, as if by magic in the past 2 days, swarming over the meadows in a fluttering wealth of orange, yellow, and white wings. He'd eaten a few of them, but they didn't even dent his hunger, and their wings coated his tongue with a foul, chalky taste. Catstraw trotted down a deer trail that dove off the edge of the cliff, followed a narrow ledge, and wound down toward the beach. Mother Ocean's constant roar filled the air. The water bore a blinding patina of light, as did Pygmy Island. The pines on the three main island peaks had turned a fiery gold in the sun. In the distance, he could see the old village site. A twinge of homesickness assaulted him. He had spent his entire life next to the soothing sounds of the mother, the lapping of the waves, the shrieking of the bald eagles, and the roaring of the lions. He missed them, even though life here had been devilish for him. He'd been disdained, after all, by nearly everybody. It seemed strange to him now that he'd put up with it for so long. If he'd only known the power of witching sooner, he could have taken revenge on everyone who had ever dared to slight him, and no one would have been the wiser. With Dire Wolf's legs, he could cover enormous distances in only a few hands of time. He could attack, kill, and be gone like a figment of moon glow. At least, he thought so. He'd been eating so many powerful spirit plants that he was no longer certain about the passing of time. Catchstraw wrinkled his snout.
They'll all pay. In this body, the fatigue of age can't touch me. If it takes me the rest of my life, I'll find each person who ever so much has looked at me crossways.
He stopped suddenly and pricked his ears. Two people strode down the beach ahead of him, a tall man and a tiny woman. He lifted his nose and scented the sea breeze. A tingle crept through his veins. He took a wary step backward.
Sunchaser, and the woman with the baby.
Yes, he could identify each of their scents. Fear made his belly knot. Why was he so frightened of Sunchaser? In the form of a human, yes, it was understandable. But as Dire Wolf, what could Sunchaser do to him?
That's the problem. You don't know. What can dreamers do to witches?
He'd never heard of a dreamer even challenging a witch. Perhaps a dreamer wouldn't dare to? Curiosity curbed his fear. What a glorious experience it would be to fight Sunchaser as Direwolf. Why, Catchstraw could rip his throat out effortlessly. How wonderful to watch Sunchaser bleed to death. When he'd first run the coast in the body of Direwolf, he'd found Sunchaser's rock shelter, seen the light of his fire reflected on the dark ocean, and he'd smelled the woman there, too. But he hadn't thought about the implications. Why would Sunchaser be with a woman? He was supposed to be dreaming for Mammoth above. At least, that's what he told people. Perhaps lust had eaten his dreamer's soul? Catchstraw loped into the coastal trees and wound his way through the forest, following unseen behind Sunchaser and the woman. The woman walked about 20 paces behind Sunchaser. She had slipped a dart through a loop on her pack and wore an atlatl tied to her belt. Did she have only one dart? Strange. She had clamped her lower lip between her teeth and reached over her shoulder to hold the baby's plump hand, as though deeply worried about something and needing comfort. Fool! Didn't she realize that a hungry animal his size could leap on her from behind, jerk the baby from the pack on her back, run into the forest and gobble down the child before anyone knew what had happened? At the thought, his stomach squealed and growled with eagerness. Human blood. In the depths of his wolf soul, he remembered that taste, rich and coppery, a little like mammoth mixed with fish. A stinging wash of desire, almost sexual, rushed through him. He broke into a run and dashed through the forest, but he spooked a grouse. Instinctively, he snatched the bird out of the air and closed his jaws around its neck. Ecstasy possessed him. Catchstraw bit down, crushing the grouse's windpipe. Blood flowed into his mouth with the sweetness of phlox blossom nectar. It inflamed his blood. From the corner of his vision, he saw Sunchaser pass among the weave of tree trunks. The dreamer's head was down, his brows pulled together over his straight nose. His white hair glimmered with an unearthly light.
It won't be long, Sunchaser. Soon you and I will face each other, with all of our powers rushing in our veins. And I will kill you.
Tannin ran steadily beside Lamkill, absorbing every detail of the sea. It was so blue, so vast. All of the trader's tales were true. The fir trees grew so tall that they speared the clouds. Huge, eagle-like birds roamed the sandy beaches. Their black wings spanned a distance greater than a man's height, and they charged each other with massive, ugly beaks. Lamkill called them giant croaking buzzards. Tannin smiled. He and Lamkill had been running since dawn, talking sporadically and laughing, basking in the splendor of the sunlight. Since they had lost Kestrel's trail, Lamkill had become his old self again, joking, smiling, telling stories. Tannin could not believe the change. They'd followed Kestrel deep into the forest, to a dense section of black timber where the deadfall stood 10 hands high. Lamkill had found the place where she'd crawled under a pile of dead branches. A single strand of her hair had clung to a twig. Then, suddenly, her trail had vanished. They'd searched for 2 days to find it again, but it seemed as if she had been lifted straight up from the ground by a whirlwind. Lamkill had laughed, actually rolled in the pine duff and laughed. And from that moment on, he had been the brother that Tannin knew and loved. He hadn't brought Little Coyote out of his pack even once, a fact that brought no little relief to Tannin's worried soul. Perhaps tonight he would try to talk sense to Lamkill, try to convince him to quit this insane hunt. As they followed the rounded arc of the shore southward, a small village came into view. 7 hide lodges nestled at the edge of a pine grove facing west. No different from his own people, who turned their lodges eastward to receive Father Sun's early morning blessing. The outside of these lodges bore elaborate paintings, using every color of the rainbow. Orange and yellow sunbursts decorated the lower parts of the lodges, while the upper halves sported blue and purple geometric designs. People lounged about outside. The sweetness of roasting fish pervaded the air. 2 large rafts floated out in the water. Bull boats, made from hides wrapped around a sapling frame, bobbed beside them. Tannin could make out the women who stood atop the rafts and knelt in the boats, spears in their hands, fishing.
Ah, perhaps these people will be able to give us some information.
I hope so.
I don't see Harrier or his idiot brothers anywhere, do you?
No, but they're not idiots, Lamkill. They're just young. Young and impetuous.
Don't worry, Tannin. I'll be pleasant. At least until we find out what they've discovered, if anything.
4 old women sat weaving baskets on the northern edge of the village. When the village dogs spotted the 2 oncoming men, they raced toward them, ears pricked, tails wagging. Tannin could see people stand and start pointing.
Let me do the talking.
Yes, big brother.
Young women had gathered around a big cook fire where 5 boiling bags hung from tripods. Silver wreaths of steam whirled around the women. From every direction, men walked toward the newcomers and surrounded them. One man, a medium-sized youth with a lean face, pushed through all the others and walked forward.
Lamkill?
Who are you?
It's Nighthawk! I'm the Bighorn Village Trader!
Oh, of course. Forgive me, Nighthawk. We met at the Pure Water Renewal, didn't we?
What are you doing here, trying to steal my trading partners?
Bah! I have enough trouble keeping up with my own partners. I don't need yours.
He strode forward to embrace Nighthawk. They patted each other's back heartily. The surrounding villagers smiled.
Well, come over here and meet Chief Staghorn. This is Moss Rock Village. These people are my 3rd cousins. They will treat you well. Staghorn! Come and meet my good friend, Lamkill. Come! Lamkill is the great trader from the marsh country.
The elder hobbled forward. He wore a heavily painted shirt made from the hide of an old dire wolf. He'd turned the fur inside out to warm his body, and gray fur spiked up around his throat. He nodded politely to Lamkill, and Lamkill gave him a deep, respectful bow.
I am honored, Staghorn. Your reputation as a great and wise chief spans the country.
I have heard of you too, Lamkill. You're the man who's searching for his wife, aren't you?
Yes, I am, Great Staghorn. As a matter of fact, we were hoping you might be able to help us.
Why are we standing? Come, sit down by my fire. I have a bag of fir needle tea already made.
Nighthawk led the way. Staghorn and Lamkill walked side by side while Tannin brought up the rear. Tannin took his place at Lamkill's side, dropping to the sand in front of the low fire, his back to the lodge, but his eyes roved the village vigilantly. Nighthawk sat to Tannin's right, and Staghorn to Nighthawk's right. But Staghorn left a noticeable gap between himself and Lamkill, as if he thought he might be tainted if he sat any closer. Tannin glanced sideways at Lamkill. His brother smiled pleasantly, seemingly ignorant of Staghorn's slight.
Here, have some tea.
Nighthawk dipped 4 abalone shell cups full and handed them around the circle.
So, Lamkill, tell us how your search is going. You haven't found this wayward wife of yours yet.
It's only a matter of time. We know she's headed for the coast.
How do you know that?
Staghorn's ancient eyes narrowed to slits. Completely taken aback, Tannin leaned forward to make a hot reply, but Lamkill put a hand on his shoulder and gently pushed him back.
Forgive me, Elder. I meant to say that we believe she is headed for the coast. That's where her lover's family came from. We think she mistakenly believes that his mother's clan will shelter her from us.
Tannin peered at Nighthawk. The young trader had clamped his jaw so tightly that it looked malformed. His gaze kept darting from one person to the next, as if waiting to see which way the wind would blow before he revealed his own thoughts. Tannin decided that there were a lot of people he'd rather be stranded in the desert with than Nighthawk. Lamkill spread his arms wide in a gesture of surrender.
I don't understand, Staghorn. Why are you being so unfriendly? What have I done to you?
Tell me about your wife, Lamkill. What has she done to you?
She committed incest, Elder, with her cousin. While I was gone trading, she bedded him in my own lodge.
And if I say I don't believe you?
I speak the truth, Elder. Why wouldn't you believe me?
Lamkill, we have had news.
What news, Nighthawk? Have you seen her?
Well, perhaps. We're not sure. Our people did not ask for her name, but yesterday 4 people from this village returned home talking about having seen a woman and a tiny baby. A newborn.
So? How many women with newborn babies are there on the coast? Huh? It could have been anyone.
I don't think so. It wasn't the woman who mattered as much as who she was traveling with.
Who was she with?
Nighthawk went silent, yielding to Staghorn. The old man fixed Lamkill with a glassy stare.
Sun Chaser.
And you think it was my wife?
No one had ever seen her before. My people know everyone within a 10-day walk of here.
Did they give you a description of her?
Yes. They said she was very beautiful, although very slender. A small woman. She had waist-length hair and an oval face, big eyes and full lips. A healing scar crossed her forehead. She carried her baby in a rabbit fur sack on her back.
Tannin felt Lamkill go rigid, but his brother showed no signs of tension. Lamkill tilted his head obligingly.
This woman does sound like Kestrel. Why was she with Sunchaser?
No one knows. That's the problem. He's a dreamer. He's not supposed to spend his time with women. It has me very upset. Who could even think of trying to capture her when she's with a man like Sunchaser? Only a fool would challenge him.
Which way were they going?
Our people couldn't say.
It doesn't matter. We will look up and down the coast until we found her.
Then you have a long way to go, and had best be on your way.
Staghorn rose on rickety legs.
You are not welcome in our village, Trader Lambkill. I ask that you and your brother respect our wishes, and leave as soon as possible.
Staghorn hobbled back to his lodge and ducked beneath the door flap. People throughout the village returned to their duties, ignoring Lambkill and Tannin as though they didn't exist.
This is hardly the welcome I expected, Nighthawk.
It's not my fault. These people are only third cousins. What do they know? May I offer you more tea?
Let's go, Lambkill. We'll learn nothing else here.
Lambkill put a hand on Tannin's knee, keeping him still.
Don't be so hasty, my brother. Nighthawk is a traitor. He understands these things.
People are all the same, no matter where you go. They have stupid loyalties, like this passion for Sunchaser. I mean, do you know how many Mammoth Spirit Dances he's missed this cycle? 4! A sacred number! It's a sign from the spirits. Everyone says that Wolf Dreamer has abandoned him and is looking for a new dreamer to lead the Sea Clans.
Really? Tell me more. Sunchaser is missing dances, and now he's been seen traveling with a woman. This is interesting. But how could Sunchaser possibly have met Kestrel? I'm puzzled.
Lambkill, all I can tell you is that people here think that Sunchaser is her protector, that he's taken her under his wing. If that is so...
Yes, I understand. No one will think of trying to claim my reward. They fear Sunchaser's power too much.
Exactly.
Nighthawk leaned back in relief.
I'm glad you see the problem. I was afraid that...
Oh, of course, I understand. Though I must admit, I hadn't expected to be received so belligerently by the people of the sea. My wife committed incest. No one condones that. I don't care where they're from.
True, but... No matter what crime your wife committed, in the eyes of my people, her violations have been washed away by her association with Sunchaser. Just to be with him is to undergo a ritual cleansing. You see that, don't you?
Lambkill roughly swished his tea around in his cup. Tannin noticed that he clutched the cup so tightly that his fingernails had gone white.
The blessed Sunchaser. Yes. Kestrel's lover was an admirer of Sunchaser's, too. I killed him for it.
Lambkill, I can't shelter you here. Not after what Staghorn said. The people, well, they would never forgive me.
Lambkill got to his feet.
Oh, yes, I understand, Nighthawk. You make your living by trading with these people. Of course you can't afford to be soiled by association with me.
Staghorn pulled his door flap aside and peered out. He gestured to two of his warriors. The men quietly went to their lodges and came out with atlatls in their hands and quivers of darts slung over their shoulders.
Let's go, Lambkill. These people are useless to us. We don't need them. We'll find Kestrel by ourselves.
Lambkill shook off Tannin's hand and turned to glower venomously at Staghorn. In response, one of Staghorn's warriors pulled a dart from his quiver and silently knocked it in his atlatl.
Lambkill...
Lambkill's gaze shifted to Tannin, cold, emotionless. It was like being stared at through the eyes of a snake. Then Lambkill casually faced Nighthawk again.
Tell me one last thing, traitor.
What? What is it?
Have you seen 4 brothers from the Blackwater Draw Clan? The oldest is named Harrier.
No, Lambkill. I promise they have not been here.
You're sure?
I swear! I have no reason to lie to you. I don't even know who these brothers are or what they have to do with you.
I'll tell you what they have to do with me. My wife killed their youngest brother, Buffalo Bird. She drove a taper-bone stiletto into his heart. Beware, Nighthawk. She is not as frail and innocent as she seems. If you so much as mention my name in her presence, she'll kill you without a second thought. Evil spirits have possessed her soul.
Nighthawk rose to his feet.
That may have been true a moon ago, Lambkill, but by now Sunchaser will have driven any bad spirits out. No one among my people will believe she's still evil. Evil cannot exist in the shadow of Sun Chaser's power.
You have helped us, Nighthawk. I thank you as one traitor to another.
Lambkill extended his hand and gripped Nighthawk's firmly. Nighthawk glanced around anxiously and leaned forward.
There is one thing that might help you, Lambkill.
What is that?
The villagers who saw Sun Chaser and the woman yesterday, they said that Sun Chaser asked them where Otter Clan Village had gone.
Gone? Do you mean this village has moved recently?
Yes. We don't know where it went, but apparently that was where Sun Chaser was headed.
Where did the Otter Clan Village used to be?
Nighthawk gave lengthy directions, but Tannen only half listened. He kept his eyes on the camp, watching each and every movement. Dislike now lined faces that formerly had shown only suspicion.
But you can't overlook it. The skeletons of 34 Memis are lying on the shore. If you keep going farther south, another 3 days' run along the beach, you will come to Whalebeard Village. Then...
I am obliged to you, Nighthawk. I would appreciate it if you would answer one final question. Have you heard of any witches in this area, on the coast?
No, not in cycles.
Lambkill whirled and tramped away, Tannen following close behind, through the center of the village, glaring at anyone who had the courage to meet his eyes. Lambkill and Tannen had made camp in a grassy meadow on the high cliffs above the beach. A few dogwood trees stood to the north, their blossoms shining brilliantly in the moon glow. 200 hands below, Mother Ocean rocked and roared, dashing the shore angrily.
Witches? Why did you ask about witches? What would we do if we met one?
Do, my brother. Why, we would ask the witch to curse Kestrel. Maybe to curse her feet so she couldn't walk, or to curse her eyesight so she couldn't see her way. The witches have many valuable uses. I am surprised that you would even ask.
But they're so dangerous to work with. They can't be trusted.
I've always hated Sun Chaser.
I didn't know you'd ever met him.
I haven't, but it doesn't matter. I know he's driving his penis into Kestrel.
Lambkill, that's not possible. Dreamers don't do that. At least not dreamers of Sun Chaser status.
You're gullible, brother. I've seen dozens of dreamers. None of them are as holy as they claim. Each has a fatal flaw.
And you think Sun Chaser's is women?
Yes. He's the type. He's very young, and the greatest dreamers are usually fools at heart.
What difference does it make? Our task is to find Kestrel and take her home.
Who will turn her over to us if she's with Sun Chaser, brother?
Tannen had been wondering the same thing, but he'd come up with no solution.
Only someone very brave.
Oh, such people are becoming as rare as mammoth ivory.
Then what should we do?
We must find the new Otter Clan village, my brother, before she does. That will give us time to talk to the village chief and explain our unpleasant chore. Then we'll surprise Kestrel when she arrives.
Now, what if the Otter Clan has already heard that she's been seen with Sun Chaser? We'll face the same hostility we found today in Staghorn.
Then we'll have to catch her before she arrives.
And just how will we do that?
My son has started to speak, Tannen. I didn't tell you because I knew you wouldn't believe me, but he has. He speaks as well as you or I. He's been talking every night, and even during the day he often whispers to me. Little Coyote will tell us about Kestrel when the time comes. We'll catch her all right.
Horseweed! Horseweed, wake up!
Horseweed roused from a deep, dreamless slumber and rolled to his back. Balsam knelt beside him, his young face wild with fear. In the starlight that streamed through the smoke hole in the roof, Balsam looked as white as snow. A thick dusting of something like pollen coated his pug nose and the shoulders of his buckskin coat. His two black braids had come half unraveled.
What is it? What's wrong?
Balsam glanced around the dark lodge, making certain that everyone else still slept. 7 adults and 8 children crowded the rectangular structure, their piles of hides unmoving around the 3 fire hearths. People had hung their belongings, baskets, atlatls, and quivers, on the walls. Starlight glinted from the stone points of darts.
Hurry! You must come with me! He's in the meadow! I don't know what he's doing!
Who?
Horseweed sat up and pulled on his moccasins. He groped in the darkness to find his coat, shrugged it on, and rose. He followed Balsam across the hilltop and out into the forest. Balsam waited until they were well away from the lodges before he spoke again.
It's Catstraw. He's up to something.
He's always up to something. What do you mean?
Balsam shook his head for silence and walked down the slope to the trail that veered around the base of the hill and headed straight westward toward Mother Ocean. Balsam's steps grew more cautious as they neared a broad meadow. The bright hues of the wildflowers had been washed silver by the light of the star people, but the blossom's sweet scent filled the cold air. Balsam dodged behind a tree, and Horseweed crouched down on his hands and knees. Tall grass tickled his throat, and he knew now how Balsam had been covered with purple nightshade pollen. The delicate little blossoms had sprouted everywhere. Out at the far edge of the meadow, near a copse of pines, movement stirred the shadows. Horseweed crawled over beside Balsam, rose to his feet again, and stuck his head out on the other side of the thick trunk. He squinted and could tell that Catstraw knelt on a broad, flat piece of sandstone. For decades, women had been using the outcrop as a place to pulverize seeds and nuts, and small, round grinding holes covered the stone. What could Catstraw be doing out there? He seemed to be drawing something on the rock with a piece of charcoal.
What's he doing? Can you tell?
I think he's witching. Horseweed, I swear that's what he's doing. Come on, we can get closer. Let me show you.
Balsam got down and crawled through the tall grass with the calculated stealth of a hunter. Horseweed followed at his heels, but he kept glancing over at Catchstraw. The ugly dreamer had stood up, skinny against the background of starlit forest, but the gray in his hair glimmered with the brilliance of mica dust. He spread his arms and began dancing. He spun and stamped his feet, like a condor dancer at the annual winter ceremonial. But then he sidestepped and spun in the opposite direction. They crawled behind a chaos of deadfall.
Have you ever seen that dance before?
No.
He's been doing it, off and on, for the past hand of time. He draws on the rocks for a little while, then he rises and dances, but then deliberately corrupts it. That's against the laws of our people.
He's never cared anything about clan law.
He's a bad man, Horseweed. Well, look at the rock by his feet. Can you see the black lines?
Yes.
Catchstraw lowered his arms and began erasing his drawing with the toe of his moccasin. He took his time, going over each line with the care of a loving artist. Horseweed watched in horror as a huge condor flew up from the other side, its massive wings blotting the stars as it soared away. Balsam gripped Horseweed's arm and sank his fingernails into the warm flesh.
Let's get out of here.
I have to see the drawing first.
There's probably nothing left of it. Horseweed, do you think I mean, he was doing the condor dance.
Stay here, Balsam. I'll be right back. Then we'll return to the village.
Horseweed rose slowly, scanning the meadow and forest as he did so, looking for danger. The condor had winged out of sight. Cautiously, he stepped around the deadfall and into the dew-soaked meadow. The scent of wildflowers mixed with the sweet tang of onion here. By the time he reached the flat stone, his pant legs stuck to his skin wetly. He braced a foot and climbed on top of the stone, then crouched, surveying the meadow again. Nothing else moved. Horseweed duck-walked to the drawing and stretched out on his belly to examine it more closely. Balsam scurried up onto the rock.
That condor, it's coming back! Hurry!
Look at this.
With his finger, Horseweed followed the lines. Catchstraw had not finished erasing them. The charcoal had smeared, but the winding paths remained visible.
What do you think this is?
It looks like a maze, doesn't it? I mean, that's what I thought when I first saw him drawing it, that it looked like a maze.
Why would he...
Oh, don't you remember? The day of the mammoth attack! Sunchaser said that he couldn't get through the maze anymore.
You mean... You think this is Sunchaser's maze?
What other maze is there?
Well, none that I know of, but...
He's witching, Horseweed! He's witching Sunchaser!
Careful! That's a serious charge. It could get Catchstraw killed.
Balsam got down on his stomach beside Horseweed.
We have to tell Grandfather. He'll know what to do.
The unmistakable sound of a condor came from somewhere close by. Horseweed and Balsam went rigid. A huge, dark shape floated above the trees.
Do you think he sees us?
Not yet. Don't run. Follow me.
With the silence of Water Snake, Horseweed slid off the stone slab and dropped to his knees to crawl across the meadow. Though Balsam tried to scramble past him several times, he managed to keep his brother calm until they reached the base of the village hill. Then Balsam leaped to his feet and sped up the trail like a jackrabbit. Horseweed stood and turned to look back. The condor had landed on top of the stone and bent to examine the charcoal maze. The bird was huge. Condor moved across the granite, cocking his head, listening. Then Condor lunged and struck like lightning. He came up with a mouse in his glinting beak, lifted his head, and choked the creature down whole.
I've never heard of a condor hunting. They just don't. They're scavengers.
A terrible chill gripped Horseweed's heart. Terror ran icy fingers through his guts.
I have to tell Grandfather about this, too.
Slowly, Horseweed backed up until he'd rounded the base of the hill. Then he raced up the hill with all his might, legs pumping. As he sped toward the hilltop, Condor saw him and lifted into the air.